Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on this week's episode, we report from the mobility conference, Commotion. While it might seem ironic to hold a conference about mobility in the city of Los Angeles, a city infamous for its traffic woes, civic leaders, transit authorities, and private mobility companies were out in full swing at Road DTLA last week for the third edition of Commotion.
What is the mobility revolution? Well, it's probably the biggest revolution that any of us will see in our lifetime.
It's not like the gas station model. It's a paradigm shift.
Transportation is the most interesting thing that is changing in communities right now, and we have an opportunity to transform it.
We can look globally and implement locally. We're comfortable in our own skins, and we're excited about that future.
Those are just some of the highlights of what's coming up over the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with our woman on the ground in Los Angeles, Carlotta Rabello.
Recognize that sound? It's estimated that the average American commuter loses around 42 hours each year stuck in traffic. I'm not talking about the time their commute takes and how long people drive for. This is an estimate of wasted time in snarled up traffic. That's an entire full work week wasted behind the wheel each year. And big cities such as New York, Los Angeles, or Washington, D.C. seem to have it much worse than anywhere else in the country. So when it was announced that the mobility conference Commotion was decamping in downtown Los Angeles to discuss micromobility solutions, public transit innovation, and the role cities can play in bringing equity to our streets, I was curious to find out just how real these ideas were and what is actually being done in practice to change it.
Commotion LA, we're in our third year. We're trying to bring together the leaders of the global urban mobility revolution. And what is the mobility revolution? Well, it's probably the biggest revolution that any of us will see in our lifetime.
That's John Rossant. He's the founder of Commotion LA, our host for today. And he's also the founder and chairman of the New Cities Foundation, which is devoted to improving the quality of life in cities. He told me a bit more about the mobility revolution that's happening in our urban environment.
For the last really over 100 years, since Henry Ford started pumping out Model Ts, nothing really has changed that much. We all moved around in gas-guzzling cars with internal combustion engines, or buses or taxis, etc. Everything is changing now. And if you just think of the micro-mobility revolution, and just maybe a little less than 3 years ago, Bird burst out of nowhere, a few miles from here in Santa Monica. And now today, you go to every major city in the world has micro-mobility e-scooter options. I was in Paris last week, and I think there are 12 different operators on the streets of Paris. And it's an amazing way to get around Paris. So we're only at the beginning of this. So if you think, in 5 years' time, I can guarantee you that when we're meeting at LA Commotion 2025, a lot of people will be coming to the event in robotic electric air taxis, kind of big drones that have the ability to take passengers.
That's your prediction.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that's coming. And the technology is right there at our doorstep. There's billions and billions of dollars going into this sector around the world, and urban air mobility will be just another way of getting around a city. So instead of hopping into a cab or into your car, you'll take your kind of Uber Air app and call up an electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, which will come in sort of 2 minutes. You'll get in and it'll deposit you where you want.
Let's use the argument on the other side. What about people that are skeptical about that future and that think, even simple as they don't own a smartphone, what's the mobility then looks like for them in the future?
One issue that we can't forget when we're having all of these intensive discussions here is the whole question of equity. And, you know, unfortunately, our cities, particularly in the Western world, I mean, if you think of Los Angeles, or San Francisco or New York or London or Paris, have become cities where the rich live in a part of the city and then everybody else, definitely not as rich, you don't have a kind of equality of opportunity. And I mean, I think it's, in this country, it's become very, very severe. It's a real issue here in Los Angeles. We have, just a couple of blocks from here, we have Skid Row, and we gave that name to the world. There are 60,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. So yes, they don't have fancy smartphones, and they're not going to be calling up urban air taxis. However, the promise of new mobility also means that mobility is becoming more accessible. If you think of shared mobility options, I mean, to own a car in the United States, between depreciation, insurance, cost of the vehicle, gas, etc., costs minimum sort of $6,000-$7,000 a year. Not everybody has that kind of money. So there are a lot of shared mobility options now that are much more reasonable, you know, Uber pool to go to work, something like that, which is really great in a city which doesn't have extensive local public transportation options, such as Los Angeles.
To exactly understand a bit better some of those challenges Los Angeles is facing, I caught up with the city's mayor, Eric Garcetti.
Los Angeles is sort of the future capital of the world. We're a developing world mindset in a developed world city, a place where our challenges are steep, but our capacity is maybe unmatched between the universities that we have here, the diverse economy, the narrative makers, the storytellers, as well as the actual doers. The challenges we face are the biggest, the worst traffic in America, greatly cleaner, but still the worst air in America, and the position that we have, where kind of Latin America, North America, and the Pacific Rim intersect, really provides us as a great testing ground. And that's what today was about, to also offer this city to the world, to say, test your product, test your innovation, test your brilliance, see the future today in a city that is the third largest metro economy in the world.
That is so much about what Los Angeles is. And when people think about the city, perhaps even in a wrong way, if they've never visited, yeah, mobility is not exactly, it doesn't have exactly the best reputation,
right,
let's say.
Exactly. Well, you know, as I say, I'm so glad we're number one in so many things, whether it's the trade capital of North America, whether it's the tourism capital of the United States, whether it's the manufacturing capital of America or the entertainment capital of the world. But one crown we want to lose is number one traffic. We want to see how transportation will help us solve a housing crisis. And, you know, Los Angeles doesn't sugarcoat its problems, but we also are a kind of city where you will not see barriers to solutions. You don't have to wait decades and pay your dues. You don't have to be from the right family or come from a specific culture. Here, it's a horizontal city topographically, and it's a horizontal city socially. And, you know, I think when people come to Los Angeles, it always surprises them because it's like 1,000 cities in one. You'll find your dense downtown, you'll find your sprawling suburban area, you'll see your particular country's culture, you'll find your people, your language, your religion, but you also see things that you've never seen anywhere in the world that collide here. The trucks that are around us, the whole food truck revolution on Twitter started in LA when a Korean short rib taco was invented with two cultures coming together. And that's the kind of thing we do every single day. So I think I always offer LA as a place to see the challenge, but also more than that, to see the solution of the future.
Now, of course, the next decade is going to be quite defining for LA in terms of all the big events that are coming to the city.
Yes.
And that provides an opportunity in terms to kind of trying to solve so many, yeah, of these issues we've been talking about.
In the 1980s, when we had the Olympics in 84, we really came into our own as a great global city. I think by 2028, we will prove ourselves to be one of the top five most indispensable global cities, a place where you see the face of the world today, a face of the country tomorrow, and everybody's excited by that goal. You know, when the world comes to you for the Olympic and Paralympic Games, it's like introducing your future spouse's parents to your apartment. You want it to be perfect, and you clean it up, you take care of it, you invest in it. But we're really not looking just at 2.5 weeks during the Olympics. We're looking way beyond that, the next 2.5 decades. At combating climate change, looking at poverty, figuring out a way to end homelessness, leading the way on resilient cities. And as a fan of Monocle, I mean, that idea that we can look globally and implement locally is, to me, what makes LA so brilliant. We're comfortable in our own skins, and we're excited about that future.
Now, for many cities, looking ahead to the future of transportation means implementing a strategy around smart cities, bringing in new technologies to help mitigate some of the challenges faced. One such place is the city of Columbus in Ohio. In 2016, it applied to the U.S. Department of Transportation's first ever Smart City Challenge and emerged as the sole winner, being awarded a $50 million grant to invest in transportation. Jordan Davis is the director of Smart Columbus, and she told me more about some of the issues the city is facing and how they are trying to solve them.
Transportation is the most interesting thing that is changing in communities right now, and we have an opportunity to transform it in a way that solves the problems in our community. And the problems that we're suffering from are economic divides that are rather severe and keeping a lot of our residents from accessing opportunity. But also, we are growing faster than we ever have. We're the number one fastest growing in the Midwest and the second largest city in the Midwest actually right now. And so we're bigger than we ever have been. So we're experiencing new problems with urbanism and growth. And we think that transportation could be in the heart of solving that. So rather than solving it in traditional ways that we've seen, we think we can leverage technology and data to do it differently and maybe faster. So we're looking at how transportation is becoming more connected, self-driving, shared, electric, and how this all can work as a service for our residents, but also what's the role of data in keeping it healthy and growing and secure. So we have everything from a connected vehicle pilot. We're deploying 174 intersections of connected vehicle environment type technology. We'll connect about 1,200 vehicles in our community to address safety and mitigate congestion. We have deployed a self-driving shuttle. First, we did it in downtown, and then we're taking it to a low-income neighborhood in the first quarter of next year to solve for the first mile, last mile challenge. From the shared mobility ecosystem, we're doing things to strategically position public transit as the backbone of our ecosystem. So our city's done a complete transit system redesign of our bus system. We've upgraded to mobile fare payment, including Wi-Fi. And then we're adding on to that a integrated, seamless, multimodal trip planning and payment application that we just released in August that allows a resident to plan, book, and pay for a trip across multiple modes from scooters to buses to TNCs. And then we have a whole effort to grow the electric vehicle market, and then we built our own operating system to manage data as well.
There's only one system, it's called a city. And there's only one transport system in a city. It's only the separation of the transport systems is artificial. If you put yourself from a citizen perspective, it's one system, it's one road, which is used by buses, by cars, by bicycles, whereas you have street lights when you have post signs. It's only one road, it's one track, no matter what is the operator. And we have to think the system as one and bring together all the actors, all the regulators, all the suppliers to improve its efficiency, make it better for a city, support the economy, and make it more sustainable.
That's Sylvain Haon. He is the Director of Strategy for the International Association of Public Transport. This organization brings together urban and public transport stakeholders from across the world, including public transport operators, authorities, manufacturers, and now new mobility players too. That's e-scooters for you and I. As we caught up in between sessions at Commotion, Sylvain told me how he believes that the traditional definition of public transit is being redefined and has now gone way beyond buses, trains, and subways.
The transport systems is about going from one place to another. It's not about going on one road or taking one line. It's going home, to work, to the school, to the gym. Public transport can provide a backbone of the transport system in a city to move the bulk of the people around. But the last, what we call the last mile, the last 500 meters, may not be possible to be done with a bus or with a train, obviously. And that's where we think there is a place for on-demand transport services, for shared scooters, bike share, and other modes of transport. The first of them being the oldest ones, walking and cycling, by the way.
Do you feel like that's one of the issues as well? For example, looking at Los Angeles, you just mentioned walking and cycling. It is a city that here, for example, as much as there are initiatives to try to encourage people, it's not what people immediately think of when they think about mobility and how to get to a place. How do you change that mindset?
I would say you have three key elements. The first one is the toughest one. It's the city. The city creates the conditions, and by city I mean the physical infrastructure, the physical urban environment. It creates the condition to make cycling, walking possible. Of course, a city with so much sprawl as Los Angeles, big highways in the center of the city, makes it more difficult. So you have to work on the physical infrastructure, you have to work on street design to create the condition for people to walk or cycle. The second part is make sure you give priority to cycling, walking, and public transport, so that you reduce the place, the physical space given to private cars, and you give more space, more ease to move around to the other modes, and in particular active modes of transport. And the third element is the need to create incentives for sustainable urban transport solutions and disincentive for the private car. And that's about parking policy, parking fees, charging for the use of the road infrastructure. So you need those three elements for a comprehensive policy to encourage alternative to going around with your own car and being stuck in traffic.
And this is an opinion that is also shared by Jordan Davis from Smart Columbus. Here she is again.
You have to ask, can private mobility be solvent? Can it actually make money? And in its effort to make money, does it actually meet the goals of public transit? And can they coexist or do they need to merge? And I think that's the question that all the cities are grappling with. So if scooters are there to make money because they're a private business, but they also need to be equitable, do those things kind of run in competition with each other? And for us, we think that the ecosystem needs to be integrated and interoperable in order to give the largest amount of choice for a resident. But the relationship of do these things become public services, I think, is still yet to be determined. Ironically, we are still in pilot mode, even from a private market perspective. Will the scooters stay around? We had Car2Go in our community. We're very fortunate to have them before we had really made a commitment to this space for 5 years, and given some company decisions, they exited the market. Well, that really left a lot of residents without their main mode of transportation, and that's a possible scenario for scooters if they don't become a successful business. So I think that, yes, on-demand services are absolutely the future, and how does it become a public service is the question. For us, we are doing a first mile, last mile on-demand service through our actual public transit authorities. So it's their vehicles, their drivers. And then VIA is the software provider behind it. And so they're providing low-cost rides for residents in a certain neighborhood to get to a transit center or somewhere in the geofenced area. And so that's changing public transit tremendously. Now, how do we bring in the other private companies is really the question.
A company that is trying to change the way we literally access public transit, that is, the way we pay for a ticket, is Masabi. I caught up with its head of partnerships, Nick Cardilicchio.
Masabi's Just Ride platform is built to allow people to pay for and receive secure dynamic ticketing for their public transport on their mobile phone. And this is achieved by a single platform for all agencies globally, where we can incorporate any products and fare types for that agency and offer them through an app downloaded in the App Store or through a third-party application, which is not our white label app, such as we do with Uber in Denver or Transit App in many locations through our software developer kit. And so our sort of basic goal is to make accessing and utilizing public transport as seamless and easy as possible for the rider. We all have to get through our day, and the more steps in the process, the more difficult it is, and sometimes the more likely we might be to take another option. And so the simpler and more streamlined your journey can be, the more likely you are to optionalize public transport.
Now, as someone that used to live in London and that I'm so used to sometimes even just leaving my wallet at home, and I can do everything with my phone in terms of traveling and whatnot, moving to the US, that proved to be a challenge in some places. But it makes me question, even if for me this seems like the ideal solution, what about people that might not have access to a smartphone? Are you suggesting it should replace all systems or just streamline it for people that tend to use this one?
No, in fact, we refer to ourselves as mobile first, not mobile only, because we know that all riders need to have access to public transport, and some people, including the unbanked or people that just prefer not to use their mobile phone for these types of transactions, should have equal right to access transport. So we do currently provide full fare collection solutions, which are, again, mobile first, but we do install vending machines, we integrate with gate lines, we provide for digitizing cash, we provide for virtualized tap cards so that people with any kind of entitlement might be able to tap into a bus or other vehicles, such as, for instance, in Fort Collins, all students at University of Colorado can get onto the bus and be validated with their student ID through the Just Ride platform. It's an NFC card. All veterans can access public transport for free using their Veterans Affairs ID. And so we don't mind what the token is. We just want to be able to provide through our back end the most seamless way for a person to use what they've got in their pocket to access public transport.
The simpler you make this system, more people you'll convert to actually use public transit and perhaps ditch, you know, that the first instinct is to call a ride-sharing platform, whatever. Instead of that, if this process is made simpler, they will eventually revert to using public transit more.
Well, what I think is people will always do what's best for themselves, and that's what we want them to do. But utilizing public transport really is what's best for you if you can access it easily, and if it's going where you want to go, and if it's cost-effective and better for the environment than all your other choices. In the end of the day, it's the best way to move around a city. So this is why we've integrated with Uber, who have fully installed our platform in their application through our software developer kit. First city we deployed that solution in, so you can now buy public transport ticketing in the Uber app, is in Denver. We have only been live for maybe 6 months, but I know that we've sold something along the lines of 20 or 30,000 public transport tickets in the Uber app. And what that means is that somebody opened up that application to get a car, and instead they were offered public transport and chose it. This is behavior change, and we know from our data that this did not take any chunk out of our regular user base. So these were new users. People are making choices for themselves based on what's best for them.
But what if you want to change the way people travel in cities, not through public transit, but by convincing car owners to trade their regular car for an electric one instead? Big part of that change in mentality comes with the access to charging stations. Louis Tremblay is the CEO of Add Energy and also of Flow, the largest charging network in Canada. We started by talking about the fact that for many skeptics, access to charging stations seems to be the main sticking point.
Everybody has the range anxiety. Everybody are wondering before they buy a car, right, where I'm going to charge. But what happened when you start to use your car is that you figure out that it's not like the gas station model. It's a paradigm shift. So all of a sudden, you don't go somewhere to charge. Everywhere you park, you need to charge. Every morning you leave your home and you're fully charged. So it's really about a game changer, like your mobile or your laptop. You know, you don't go somewhere to plug your laptop. Everywhere you go, you plug. There's no range anxiety when you start to use the electric vehicle. But it is important for, I would say, municipalities and city to understand that reality and make sure that charging is available where people need it.
Do you have difficulties or is it a challenge to get cities to understand that?
I would say no. City has are open because they want to make sure that this happens. So we're there to provide the data because we operate so many chargers. We can help them to understand to install busy charger, so charger where people will need, you know, use them as they're working nearby and they need to charge, and overnight people live in multi-unit dwelling, they can use it during the night. So we can have really busy charger, but if the city wants more than having busy charger, but want to install charger everywhere across like a city like LA to make sure that everyone has access to a dependable charging service. People living in condo apartment, which is a lot of people here in LA. So we need to make sure we put chargers everywhere so people feel confident and then they will switch to electric and use the, like in LA, the deployment we just did, use the curbside charger to charge overnight because they don't have a parking where they can recharge. It's only on the curb.
So is it then the concept here that if you make it and make it simple, people will use it? As long as it's available, it will be easier to convince people to switch the type of vehicle that they use.
Yeah, again, back to the laptop and cell phone example, you know, it's about freedom. you know, if you understand how the electric vehicle work, you will appreciate it more. It's silence, the acceleration is great, and it's simply to use, and there's charging everywhere. So why not making the switch? But people has to understand, you know, all the benefits of the electric car before they get confident. But we're there to make it simple for them.
Before the wrap-up of this year's Commotion LA, I also had the chance to speak to Amanda Roraff, the managing director of Planet M. This is the mobility initiative of the state of Michigan, which is helping companies access the mobility ecosystem. She started by telling me more about the city of Detroit and how its mobility revolution is quietly moving along.
The city of Detroit footprint is very large, much larger than what people realize. We only have about maybe 800,000 residents. However, the footprint is equivalent to Manhattan, Boston, and San Francisco. So if you could imagine, there's a lot of empty space with the limited number of residents that exist there today. So some of the challenges are just having areas in the city in which we are trying to provide access to public transit, first mile solutions. So we've actually launched a particular pilot to solve some of that in one particular neighborhood called the Osborne neighborhood on the east side of Detroit. The pilot itself, I think, is interesting. It starts to help define some of the challenges, but it's called Car for You. It's being led by General Motors on their Maven platform. With that, what we discovered is that many Detroiters are unbanked, and many perhaps maybe they have a smartphone but don't have a data plan to be able to access the Maven platform. And so what we did was we partnered with a community center. We placed two of the Maven vehicles there at a discounted rate, so it includes insurance. The other thing to note about Detroit and Michigan, currently we have the highest car insurance rate in the United States. City of Detroit is even worse. So there's a very low personal car ownership, so a lot of challenges with mobility in the city of Detroit. So with these two vehicles in partnership with the community center at a discounted rate, it includes insurance, it includes your fuel, and you can go into the community center to actually rent out the vehicle without having to have a credit card and without having to have a smartphone. So that is only launched a couple of months ago, so we're still collecting a lot of data on that, but that's just one way that we're trying to solve some of the specific challenges that are unique to Detroit.
Just like what we heard earlier from Louis Tremblay of AdEnergie and Flow, the state of Michigan also sees electric vehicles as the way forward for mobility, and educating the public is a big part of making it happen. Here's Amanda again.
As part of Project Kinetic, we have a second pilot that's launched. It's called Charged, with a capital D for Detroit at the end, and essentially it's Detroit's first fast chargers. But it wasn't just about charging. It's also about EV education, outreach, and helping to, you know, hopefully get Michiganders to embrace this idea of electrification in the future. So what we did was we didn't just put these chargers off somewhere off to the side. We actually put them in a very dense area as part of the city. So there's several pocket parks in the downtown and midtown part of Detroit. We selected one of those. We put these four chargers adjacent to the park where there's tons of programming and activation through a group called Downtown Detroit Partnership. And so the idea really there is that somebody would come on down, charge very quickly, maybe within 30 minutes, while they're there, and it's a two-hour parking limit, so still trying to figure out the whole balance of how do you pay for parking and pay for charging. So unfortunately, we haven't cracked that nut yet, so we haven't been able to streamline that, but we haven't given up. And then the idea is, you know, it will help drive economic development. There'll be programming in the park as well. So we partner with a couple organizations that are working on developing some programming. So that will be the second case study that we're just starting to write now. And then we will package all of this together as a white paper, really to help other cities.
So can and should cities fully embrace micromobility solutions? And in the meantime, how do we make our streets safer? Here's John Rossant of Commotion LA once more.
More and more people are biking, more and more people are going around by scooter. And so there's much more of a popular pressure now, which is we're in a democracy and politicians who run the city hear the voters. I think there's more of a public clamor for this type of thing. At the same time, one of the problems is people who own cars have been extremely entitled. We subsidize massively car culture. By our tax dollars goes to, you know, keeping streets and streetlights and freeways and things like that. And they feel very entitled. So, I mean, some Angelenos I talk to feel the same way about their cars that, you know, Oklahomans feel about their guns. And it's become kind of a Second Amendment issue in a way. You know, we have a constitutional right, Guard Amendment, to our gas-guzzling cars, and no one's going to take it away from us. A lot of people feel that way. I think it's a generational thing. I mean, there's clearly, you know, my kids, you know, they like driving around in a car, but it's not the be-all and end-all. They have a completely different attitude to ownership, you know, whether it's of a car or anything else. So they get the sharing economy in a very fundamental way. So things are changing. It's just a question of time.
For Monocle in Los Angeles, I'm Carlotta Rabella.
That's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Rabello from Los Angeles and edited by David Stevens from Zurich. What a mobile team they are. Now, to play you out of this week's episode, who else? Here's Little Eva with Locomotion. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.